Hey, it's your friend SJ, and welcome to the Wellness and Wellies podcast. Hey friends, so today is Mother's Day as I'm recording this episode, and I've taken this opportunity to come upstairs and do some reflecting with you about like being a woman, being a mother, what it is to, you know, be a mom and to be a woman in 2024. And I'm also using you as a bit of an excuse to hide from my six-year-old because she is being a bit of a grump and dictating what she does and doesn't want for dinner. So I thought I would hand that over to her father and let him get on with it. So I want to talk about Mother's Day, what Mother's Day is, and I'm recording this on Mother's Day in the UK. But I know for a lot of you who listen to me, you are in the US, and I know that your Mother's Day comes in May, and I'm going to touch on like why it's different and some of the history behind that. And then I also want to talk about International Women's Week and some of the reflections that I've had sort of over this past week with International Women's Week, International Women's Day, Mother's Day, and then leave you with some tips for how to make your next Mother's Day less stressful. So let's start off by touching on the fact that the UK and the USA have different Mother's Day. And Mother's Day in the UK has its origins from like the 16th century with the custom of Mothering Sunday, which fell on the fourth Sunday of Lent. So this year, that is the 10th of March, and that's three Sundays before Easter. And it sort of ties in with the church calendar. So that's why it can sometimes be a bit confusing trying to work out like which Sunday it is on the year because it's not a set date. So this year in the UK, it fell on the 10th of March, which also happened to be the first birthday of my puppy Sky as well. So not only did we celebrate Mother's Day, I kind of felt like I was a bit eclipsed by the dog who was celebrating her first birthday. Now, for those of you in the States, I know that you celebrate Mother's Day on a different day. And I believe, and I'm sure you guys can correct me because I just kind of did a really quick Google search about this, that it was started with a woman called Anna Jarvis, and she held a small memorial service for her own mother on the 12th of May in 1907. And soon after that, most places in America were observing the day. And in 1914, the US president made it a national holiday, celebrated on the second Sunday of May. So this isn't tied in to Lent, to the church calendar. It's sort of a separate idea, a separate concept. But I am going to kind of like wave the UK flag over here for it, because we started this back in the 16th century. So yeah, anyway, so moving on from the two different dates for Mother's Day, we as well have also been celebrating this year International Women's Day, which was on the 8th of March. So it was on the Friday. And this is a holiday celebrated annually on the 8th of March as a focal point for like women's rights movements. And this day gives focus to issues such as like gender equality, reproductive rights, and violence and abuse against women. And I like the fact that this kind of ties in alongside Mother's Day, Mothering Sunday. I think it's quite sort of quite a nice link of the two sort of coming together. So before we kind of dig into some of the tips and advice for making Mother's Day less stressful, I thought I'd share some things and some observations that I had this week around Mother's Day and also International Women's Week. And it's just some thoughts really of some of the challenges I think that we still face as women, because we kind of live in this world where we are taught to believe that we can have it all, and that we should be doing it all, from the pressures that we get sort of, you know, from social media and things like that. And I was just thinking about some of these things throughout this week and some of the experiences that I had that just kind of sort of makes me sort of think, you know, have things really changed? Or is it actually about the pressures on us as women are actually bigger? Now, if you have been around a while and you know me, you know that my background is education. I have been a teacher for a very, very long time now. I actually graduated as a teacher like 20 years ago, which just makes me feel so old. But I'm still working part-time in the education sector for a charity in the UK. And because of that, I was privileged this week to attend like a number of different webinars. And one of the webinars was hosted by an organisation that we have here in the UK, and it's about education and women in education, and it's called womened.com. So you can go and have a look at their website. And ultimately, it's a group of leaders, women leaders in education, who come together to raise the profile of women and encourage women to come together sort of as a network to increase the number of women leaders in the education sector in the UK. Now, it's quite an interesting conversation, because if you think about like education, you think about schools, the majority of teachers, particularly in like the younger years, we call it primary in here, the majority of teachers are women. Like, that has been a real sort of like gender. If ever there was an environment where there were more women working, then education was definitely it. And particularly in our primary schools, working with younger children, like early years, kindergarten, whatever year you think of. If you think about the teachers that are in your school, particularly with younger children, the majority of those teachers are women. So the question that we have within the education field is, if the majority of women are, the majority of teachers are women, why is that not represented in the number of women leaders? And if you look across in terms of sort of heads of big secondary schools, like CEOs of what we call here in the UK our multi-academy trusts, where we have like a lot of schools that are kind of like grouped together as one sort of organization with a CEO. And those leaders do tend to still be male. And when you think about it, that doesn't really make sense, because the majority of teachers are women. So this is actually quite a good example to look at in terms of education, because we can still see that there is this like real disproportionate representation of women in a sector where there are more actually in the workplace. So it gets you thinking, why is this? What's going on? And this is why this particular organization exists, because there still is this sort of like wage gap, gender pay gap, and education is a really, really good example of where, you know, so many women are in the workplace, but they are hugely underrepresented in the leadership. And if we look across in terms of like gender pay, worldwide, women only make 77 cents for every dollar that is earned by a man. Now, for me, having worked in education for a really long time, I can still see this. It's part of, you know, it's one of those things where I kind of sit there and sort of find myself scratching my head, because you can see all of these really amazing female educators, female leaders, many of them who will perhaps have some form of middle leadership position. But the percentage of women who are really sort of leading the education organizations, that percentage is still really small. And I know that this is quite common probably in corporate worlds, and I just wanted to sort of like raise that and share that with you, because education is such a female-dominated space, but yet men are still the main leaders in there. And I wonder what your experience has been like. Like, are you in education? Have you worked in a corporate role? Like, have a think about it. You know, who was in those positions? Who had those positions? Who had those positions of leadership? And what was that like for you? Like, what kind of experience have you had? Or maybe you're listening to me and you are a leader. I would just love, like, if you have a minute, come and find me on Instagram or, you know, send me an email, because I'd really love to hear, like, your experience, your thoughts about that gender pay gap, that disproportional representation of women when it comes to leadership roles. Now, I'm sure we can probably sit here and we can kind of like discuss the reasons why. And that sort of then got me thinking about like the challenges that we have as women when it comes to like our bodies, like periods, menopause, and all of this kind of coincided for me this week with I should have been traveling to London for our like half yearly like work get together. So the organization I work for, we have like a small head office in central London, and every 6 months we all come together as a team. Now, I didn't go, and the reason I didn't go was because my body, my period was absolutely kicking my butt, and it was really heavy, it was unpredictable, I had a lot of pain, and it just meant that because of that, I couldn't travel. Like, the idea of sitting on a train for like 3-4 hours going into London, sitting in these kind of meetings and stuff, was just not on my radar. Now, I'm really lucky that the organization I work for are, you know, completely understanding, completely like sympathetic, really flexible. And I really didn't feel bad sort of saying, you know, I can't travel. Everyone just accepted it. My line manager was like, hey, don't worry, you know, I get it, it's not a problem. But I know that that is not the common experience. And I think back to when I was actually in the classroom, and you know, how I would just literally have to dose myself up on painkillers. I would have like be like having like massive thick sanitary towels in my underwear. I'd also have to make sure that I got like really thick tampons as well, so that, you know, I didn't have any kind of leaking when I was in the classroom. And I had to be really careful about the clothes that I was wearing, and I'd try and make sure that, you know, like that there was no way that anyone would kind of know, or, you know. But it's a worry, isn't it? And this is something that men just don't experience. Like, they don't know what it's like to go through this discomfort, this like embarrassment, this sort of feeling of worrying, you know, am I gonna am I gonna flood, am I gonna leak, like any of this kind of thing. They just don't have these kind of worries. And it really got me sort of thinking, you know, like particularly for like menopause, when things become, you know, unpredictable. Like, there's so much information out there. You can, you know, you can really kind of see all the stats and everything about how so many women around the age of menopause, you know, like leave the workplace because they can't like cope with it because of the symptoms that we get from menopause. And there is like a statistic out there that says that 60% of people between the ages of 45 and 55 who are experiencing menopause symptoms say it has a negative impact on them at work. So that can potentially mean that when you are of that age, you're not necessarily going to be taking that step to take on more responsibility, to take on like leadership, although it's well within your capabilities, but your body is just kind of not on your team. And many of us, and myself included, take a step back. Like, we take a step back because we're tired, we find it hard to concentrate, we, you know, have physical symptoms, and we're worried about, you know, like bleeding and unpredictable periods and pain and things like that. So it's no wonder that there still is this gender pay gap. And there are so many women, you know, who are like so capable and so intelligent, but just aren't stepping out into that real worth that they have and the things that they are capable of doing because of the symptoms that we're experiencing through menopause. And that's before we even kind of think about, you know, going back a few years to, you know, what was going on with our bodies when we were pregnant, the time that we took out to have children, to, you know, to like recover from giving birth. It's no wonder that that gender pay gap still exists. And all of this sort of this past week about International Women's Week and raising, you know, awareness around like gender equality, reproductive rights, it just really kind of got me a little bit annoyed, because ultimately what I'm saying is that, you know, we talk about it being more equal, but in my opinion, we are so, so far away from it still. Now, for those of you who do have, you know, like problems with menopause symptoms or periods or anything like that, in the UK, you are actually protected against discrimination under the Equality Act of 2010. Now, menopause is largely covered by three protected characteristics of age, sex, and disability discrimination. Now, the Equality Act obviously is also linked to the EU. And interestingly, I didn't know this, but one of my colleagues was talking about this, that some countries do actually allow what is called like menopause leave. So in 2023, for example, in Spain, they passed some legislation entitling individuals with menstrual pain to actually receive paid leave, provided that leave was authorized by a physician. So that is big. Like when you think about that, that is massive, isn't it? And I don't know about you, but think about, you know, the amount of days that you've potentially lost of work because you've had period pain, or you've been sick, or, you know, like you've just not been able to function in the same way as you would do normally. If you're pregnant, you are protected and you are not allowed to be discriminated against if you have to take off time because you are unwell because you're pregnant. So this is really something similar that they've introduced in Spain, is that if you are experiencing period pain and you are not able to work, you will still get paid, because ultimately it's not your fault and it isn't our fault. And that then got me thinking about, you know, sort of like the experience of women who are pregnant and how you are protected against in the UK. And obviously I can only talk about like my experiences here in the UK, and I know it's not the same across the globe. Like, as a pregnant woman, if you need to take time off to go to like appointments, if you are not well, you cannot be, your employer cannot penalize you for that. So you don't lose pay. You it doesn't count towards like sickness time and that sort of thing because it's pregnancy related. And it then got me thinking about like what it's like for women as well when we are, you know, we've had a baby, we've had a period of maternity leave, and I know that that maternity leave varies from place to place and that that isn't equal. And I was thinking about one of my colleagues, and she has come back to work after a year, because in the UK you are allowed to take up to a year off and you are still able to come back to your job. And you don't get paid for the whole of that year. You don't get paid for an awful lot of it, to be honest with you. But you do get some really sort of like basic statutory maternity pay, which is about like, I don't know, I can't even remember. It was about like £150 a month or something ridiculous when I had Chloe. But you can claim that for up to 8 months. Depending on the type of job that you're in, you get different benefits, but that's kind of like the state statutory sort of amount. But the key thing is, I think, and this is a real benefit in the UK, is that you can be away from your role for a year, but you will still come back to a job. You will still come back to your job. Your employer can't get rid of you. They can't make you redundant. It's against the law to do that while you are on maternity pay. And it got me thinking as well about what it's like to go back to work after you have had a baby. And one of my colleagues, she has just come back. She's been off for a year and her baby just started nursery. And of course, they went through all of the things of, you know, baby being poorly, catching colds, you know, all of this kind of stuff. And I don't know if it's the same for you, but certainly the case in our house, like if Chloe is poorly, I'm the one who does the nurturing, the looking after. You know, I'm the one who picks her up from school if she's ill. Her school was closed a couple of weeks ago because there was flooding. And I was the one who was sort of having to change work and patterns and things like that to accommodate that. And all of that kind of like sort of expectation of looking after children, the default parent will like probably like nearly 99.9% of the time be you, will be the woman. And that obviously is going to have an impact on your stress, the work that you get done, whether you are like me. I mean, I really do have like incredibly flexible employers, but I still have work to do and I still have work to get done. So I had to do it like in the evening, which made me tired. And, you know, all of these kind of like knock-on effects that can add to your stress and, you know, put more pressure under you. Even though you might have a flexible, you know, approach to work, you might have an understanding employer, you've still got to kind of find the time to catch up on these things, haven't you? And of course, that is going to have a knock-on effect. But, you know, for men, like they're not impacted in the same way. So they kind of get on with their day-to-day routine, they go on with their day-to-day work, they have to do, you know, the things that they would, that they're normally doing. But you know, there isn't that pressure and that expectation that we have to be the one who is nurturing and looking after children. And there's so much research out there about how, you know, even in the situation in COVID where you like had two parents at home, it was still the women that automatically defaulted into supporting with homeschooling, you know, looking after, making sure that everybody's fed, you know, even in those kind of situations, there was still this, you know, unequal share in responsibility when it came to like the children. And it got me also thinking about how sometimes we have to make a decision as women as to whether or not we're going to stay home with our children, because, and I'm sure it's the same for many of you across the world, childcare is incredibly expensive. And, you know, you're talking sort of like hundreds and even thousands of pounds a month for childcare. And you are going back to work and you're paying for your child to be looked after somebody else. That's so hard. It's so challenging. It's such, you know, you're put in this situation where you're kind of, you know, choosing between being present for your family or going, you know, or a job that you've potentially gone to, you know, university for and studied for a long time. And you've been brought up like I was, that, you know, you go to uni and you get a good job and you work really, really hard at your job. And then you're in a situation where you decide to start a family and you're like, okay, so what do I do now? Like, if I go back to work, literally all of my wages are going to be going on childcare. Or do I stay at home and walk away from a career that, you know, I've been working really, really hard for? And one of my colleagues as well, we were kind of really sort of, you know, like chatting about this. And she's based in France and she is about to go off on maternity leave. And she was saying that in France, like childcare is hugely subsidized. And like, even if you are one of the higher earners in France, you're probably not going to be spending more than like £450 a month on childcare which is just insane. Like, we spent over £1,000 a month on childcare when Chloe was going back to school. The recent budget that we've had in the UK, we can see that they are taking steps to increase like the number of hours and free childcare that people are going to have, because, you know, people want to go back to work but they can't afford to because childcare is so expensive. You know, that is slowly and hopefully trickling through. But when you think about it like that, you know, as a woman, that's a challenge. That is a challenge. And, you know, throughout this whole sort of process of International Women's Day, and we're trying to raise the profile on, you know, like gender equality when it comes to pay and, you know, discrimination against women in the workplace, like this stuff is nowhere near solved. And the point of me talking about this isn't to kind of be all doom and gloom. It's just to kind of like help you to hear that you're probably not the only person who is finding this difficult. Like, you're not the only woman who is juggling childcare and career and spending a whole load of money on, you know, your kids going back to school. If you're the same age as me and perhaps you're going through menopause, you know, it's not just you that's struggling at work, but we just don't talk about these things. Like, nobody says this stuff. Nobody talks about, oh my gosh, you know, I don't want to sit on a train for 3 hours because I've got the worst period in the whole wide world and I'm probably going to leak everywhere and that will be really embarrassing. But I'm saying this stuff because I want you to know that you're not on your own and that this, like, it's normal to talk about these things and we're all going through the same stuff. So all of this being said, I came to the end of last week feeling a little bit hard done by as a woman. And I was thinking, do you know what? I'm really looking forward to Mother's Day because that's going to be like my day off. I'm going to be celebrated as a woman. My family are going to show me how much they appreciate all my hard work and all the effort and everything that I put into looking after them all the time. No, don't be silly. And I think that the whole Mother's Day disappointment thing does exist. I think we hope that our family are all going to turn into like these wonderful human beings for 24 hours and we're going to be put on some kind of pedestal and, you know, sort of like fed grapes. But the reality is, like, we're probably not. And you really probably are the glue that is holding that unit together. And I just want to just, you know, not to kind of be negative about things, but I think I always kind of come away from Mother's Day feeling a bit disappointed because I am hoping to receive the same level of care and love that I give to my family. And of course, we don't give to receive, but I do just wish that on Mother's Day it would be like the one day where, you know, I really got a proper break and people weren't whinging at me and shouting my name all the time. And, you know, my daughter did what she asked when she was asked. But no, that didn't happen. So I think I just want to kind of leave you with some ideas for like managing the stress of Mother's Day and how to have a less stressful Mother's Day and to try and have a day that perhaps has a little bit more meaning. And I do want to kind of caveat here. I know that Mother's Day for many of you is hard because you may be experiencing or you've experienced loss and grief. Maybe you didn't have a great mum, or maybe you're in a situation where you're desperate to be a mum and you haven't been able to do that. But, you know, regardless of whether you are a biological mother or not, or maybe you're the mum of a fur baby, or perhaps you have some nieces and nephews who really, really adore you, or maybe you're the person who, you know, helps your friend out with their kids. Like, you deserve recognition and you deserve to receive love for the things that you do. And I think it's often our role, purely because, like, it kind of is our role in pretty much every other area of our family's life to set the boundaries and set the expectations of ultimately what we would like on this day. So my three pieces of advice I'm going to leave you with is, number one is to actually do that, to share your expectation of the day with your husband, your family, and friends so that they know what it is you want. Because no one's a mind reader. We kind of hope that people will, you know, just do it off their own back. But, you know, if your kids don't put their clothes in the laundry bin, or, you know, if nobody does the washing up, the chances are they're probably not going to exactly know what you want when it comes to Mother's Day. So my first piece of advice really is to share your expectations so they know what you want. You've made it quite clear. And it is okay to do that, by the way. It's not selfish. Now, number two is to consider, do you want a day with your family, or would you actually prefer a day to yourself? And I know there is this kind of feeling that, oh, it's Mother's Day, you know, I should be with my family. Like on the holidays, like, is that actually going to be fun? Or is it going to be a heap load more stress? Like the idea of going out for dinner, this morning, for example, we went out for breakfast, which was a really nice, like the food was really great, but that comes with its own level of stress. It comes with hoping that your children are going to behave themselves in a restaurant. It comes with remembering that they might want a drink and a snack, or they're not going to like food off the menu. You know, so I would ask yourself, do you want to go out for dinner with your family, or is that going to be more stressful? Or would actually going out on your own somewhere be more joyful for you? And it's not selfish if you want to take that time for yourself. If you want to go and, like, I don't know, go to the gym on your own for a few hours, or if you've got a friend who's kind of feels the same, and maybe the two of you could go out for lunch, or maybe you and your mum go out for lunch, or your sister go out for lunch, or your friend, or, you know, just kind of like have some time out if that is what you want to do, and if that is going to make you feel like you have a more meaningful experience on Mother's Day. And number three, and I did this myself this year, because I loved him, he's great, but he's not good with presents, he's not organized with this kind of thing, it's just not his. I mean, we've been together a really long time, and in the outset I used to get a bit disappointed with it. But if you live with somebody who is not great with presents, but you would quite like a present on Mother's Day, tell them exactly what you want, or do what I did and buy it for yourself. And that was exactly what I did. I bought myself, there's a lovely company that I will link in the show notes called Mother Cuppa. It is a company based in the UK, owned by a lovely lady who called Candice, who blends tea, and the tea blends are amazing and they help support hormones. And she does ship internationally. I really, really recommend the Energize and the Relax teas that she has. And they come like in like really cute packaging, 3-liter letterbox. But she also does this really, really gorgeous like glass teapot and cup. So I treated myself this year for Mother's Day to a new teapot and a glass cup and some tea to go and sit down and relax. And that was what I wanted. So I bought it for myself, and it arrived, and I said to Tim, you can wrap this up. This is my Mother's Day present from Chloe. And, you know, it was something that I wanted. And, you know, it wasn't a bunch of flowers because I don't really care for them. It wasn't a box of chocolates. It was actually something I wanted. So be really specific about what you want. Or if not, buy it for yourself, give it to them and wrap it up. Because we can't rely on other people to like create our own happiness. And if you are feeling like a lot of emotion and a lot of stress around days like Mother's Day or your birthday, for example, I think these three tips are really important. So let me just recap them for you. Share your expectations with the people around you. Number two, consider whether or not you actually want a day with your family or do you want some time on your own. And thirdly, be really specific about a present, a gift, or something that you want to do, and, you know, even organize it for yourself. I hope you found today's episode helpful, insightful. Maybe it has got you thinking about a few things and reflecting on some things in your life. If you've got any thoughts and feedback, I would love to hear from you. I'd love to hear about your experience of Mother's Day. You know, what is life like for you as a working mum? Maybe what is it like? Do your periods, your menopause symptoms impact what you do at work? Come and share that with me. You can share it confidentially by dropping me an email. We can have, I'd love to know your thoughts on what we talk about on the podcast. And I hope it's helped. I hope that me talking about these things like openly, honestly, and frankly has helped you to understand that you're not on your own and you're not the only person who goes through this process. So my friend, have an amazing day, have an amazing week, and I look forward to catching up with you next week.